from the newsroom of South Coast Today. This is ST Speaks, a podcast diving deeper into the news of the day and covering hot button issues that matter to you. You're listening to ST Speaks.
Welcome back to the Bubble 2.5. I'm Mike Bonner. He's Montana Samuels. This is the Standard Times podcast room. And Montana, we have a pretty big day today in the Bubble.
It's a big day for the Bubble. We have our first in-studio guest today for episode 2.5, which Mike and I discussed prior. We are aptly going to name our episodes in halves because of that that one episode we will not mention ever.
It's just pure, utter narcissism, would it be? Just in the fact
it's
that
our vanity.
Yeah.
It's our vanity coming out.
What, 100 years from now, or, you know, when we have 100 episodes from now, and people are like, why is it 101.5? And the true people who started with us, you know, the original, we need to come up with...
They'll be the crotchety old folk that are like, you people back in my day.
Like, we need to come up with a name for our fans, like the Beliebers.
Well, we don't name our...
The fans come up with their
names. Beyonce didn't get pick the Beehive, you know?
Right, that's a good point.
That was named by, like, Pitchfork or something like that.
I like it, though. We'll let the people choose. We're the people's show. So we'll
let the people's show.
Let the people choose there.
That's right. And being the people's show, Mike... give the people a little bit of info about our guest we have in studio today.
We're having Bethany Photo. I call her Bethany. That's how I met her. But
right.
I think on Facebook she's Beth Photo.
I believe I called her Beth. So we covered all our bases.
Well, she's your friend. I'm more of an acquaintance regarding reporting. But no, I met her. She was one of the first people I met as a reporter here as I approached my one-year anniversary at the Standard Times. She was running for Ward 3 counselor in the runoff last year. Total underdog. Not a lot of people thought that she had a chance to win. She was going up against Hugh Dunn, who won, and she was going up against former counselors who had previously won in Ward 3 and other wards. So not many people thought that she would, you know, stand a chance. And in fact, she advanced to the runoff. And I think the reason why she's so interesting is because a lot of people would have just, the story would have ended there, like, oh,
right,
you know, good for her. She thought of, you know, she was upset with the system. She ran and had her voice heard, and, you know, maybe next time she can win or do something. And she basically took it upon herself to stay active in the community and started a neighborhood committee, a neighborhood community thing,
right.
Hashtag NBW3. And it's trying to bring Ward 3 neighbors together. And then she's also on the Human Relations Commission. So we'll be speaking with her soon. In studio, mind you.
In studio, yeah. She plays a rather interesting role in community politics where she really sort of is the... it's sort of a grassroots politician in New Bedford, it seems, which is something that I feel is unique to the civic life in New Bedford, if you will. So...
Yeah, it was interesting because I don't even know how I stumbled upon it, but I found a New Bedford Guide story from, I think, last year that said, I think, 11 or 10 people that should run for mayor, and I think two people weren't politicians. And
right.
To me, I was expecting something different out of the story just because to name the mayor, which obviously makes sense,
right.
But the rest of them were mostly city councilors. So it seems as, you know, people who haven't lived in the city a long time, it's nice to see people outside of the bubble, so to speak, trying to get active in it, because that's when you hear all voices. You just don't want one person's or voice heard. It's democracy works best when all voices are heard and all voices speak and all voices are heard.
Right. And I mean, you've seen that in other cities, like major markets. I mean, you look at rapper Killer Mike of Group Run the Jewels. I mean, he is sort of Atlanta's voice of the people when it comes to politics, and he's risen to this role where it's not only artists anymore.
I watched all of his interviews with Bernie Sanders, actually.
Right? I mean, and it's really sort
in
of
the barbershops. It was really, yeah, it was
in
really
his,
interesting.
You know, he owns those shops, right?
Yeah.
Swag Shop. If you're in Atlanta, all my ATLians, go get your haircut at Swag Shop.
I love your shout-outs. That's just... I need to start doing that.
Yeah, Mike. Well, you can't steal my thing. You got to get your own thing.
Well, I guess the thing that we share is enjoying talking to guests, so we can bring in our first in-person guest Bethany Photo. And now we're here with our guest, Beth Photo, who is on the Human Relations Commission and hashtag MBW3 Community Project. I wrote a story about that a couple months ago. So go check that out. Shameless plug to begin our interview.
Yeah, once again, we will link that down below.
But Bethany, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks,
we really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I always mess up names, and not that I messed your name up, but Bethany, I think the first time we met, it was Bethany, so I've always just kind of consistently stayed with
that. Yeah, I mean, Beth is less syllables. I'm not one of those, like, preference and namey people, so whatever feels better.
So in speaking about how we met almost, I guess, 10 months ago, give or take, you were running for Ward 3, and about this time, a year ago, what was kind of going through your mind, and what led you to making that jump to running?
I was going through some personal things in my life and kind of felt bottom of the barrel. And that compared with the political climate that we were in, where everybody's complaining and talking about all the things that they want to do and not stepping up to do anything, those things combined, the special election came up and I just said, I'm going to run.
So for people who are not aware of the story, Bethany was really kind of an underdog. Six candidates ran, right?
Yeah,
six.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure many people placed Bethany as a potential candidate in the terms of the runoff. And then she won the runoff. Well, she advanced in the runoff and faced Hugh Dunn. And many people would have maybe ended there. Hugh Dunn won and won the Ward 3 spot. But what's really impressed me since that point is you have someone who said she was going to run because she was upset and people were complaining and they did something about it. But then not only ran, but after that kind of continued. And as we mentioned, Human Relations Commission, hashtag NBW3, yes. The Community Project, which is basically bringing together neighborhoods in the Ward 3 community, all happened after the election. What motivated you to continue to go on to try to make changes?
Well, my entire campaign was based on the fact that, in myself included, that, nobody, we all talked about we want to change and nobody did anything, and it starts at home in your own community. And that was my entire campaign, and how hypocritical would it have been for me to campaign that and then just fall back into the shadows. I really felt passionate that, elected or not, if you say something, you do it.
Yeah. And so one of the things that always interests me when you hear these stories about people who maybe, not that you hadn't participated in the system as like a public or as a private citizen before, but now running, I'm always curious, were there people who you sort of looked up to or that influenced you to speak out so outwardly when it came to politics?
Definitely. Dana Ribeiro was certainly one of my biggest cheerleaders, and Michael Joe Santos, who is actually introduced me to Dana. I knew him casually, and I kind of messaged him and said, hey, I should run for this, special election, because we share a lot of the same political views. And so both of them, they were huge. It was almost like I didn't really think that I could, and if it weren't for these two saying, you can, why can't you? If they can, you can. So for sure, and they supported me and stuck by me. Without those two, I probably wouldn't be here today.
Yeah, so. And it's interesting. You said, so the people who, not influenced, but sort of gave you that extra push, is that a voice that you hope to be for the younger generations of people and maybe women specifically?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, that's exactly what it is. I mean, and I speak about this often if I'm ever in a forum or any type of thing like that, if it weren't for Dana saying, I see something in you and pushing me to follow through, I wouldn't. And my hope is to do that for other young women who I see a little bit of me in, who I know they want to, but maybe they think they can't. So for sure.
Right. Yeah. And so that brings us to now. Mike did some coverage on an event that he told me you had quite a hand in and sort of curating and influencing. Can you, Mike, do you want to?
Well, I wanted to actually touch on that aspect. I was at the Women's March, which you helped organize, and there was a portion of it at the library where you spoke to the public and said, why are we here? Mm-hmm. And you did it so, what's the word? I'm graciously, nonchalantly, very confidently, which if I'm being 100% honest, when you started running, there was always a sense of hesitancy when you spoke and a little nervousness in your voice. Yeah. And that was totally gone. And you're speaking in a much larger crowd where usually it was just maybe to me or I know you were did a debate with Hugh Dunn on WBSM. And there was always I always sensed nerves, and there were no nerves in speaking to a huge crowd of people. What has changed? Where does that confidence now come from that that you've now established in command?
Well, I think, well, first of all, I knew I was in a crowd in front of people who supported the views I supported. So that's always very helpful, you know, when you're talking to that. But I, from experience as well, talking in front of a lot of people. But then having your intelligence and your worth validated through, and that's why it's really important to do these things, you know, is because as you grow and, you know, pass a lot of roadblocks, you start to feel validated in yourself. So that helps a lot.
Is that something you would say this process is kind of done for you? Is that validation in terms of, I guess you would be best to explain it, the validation. How did that... Where did that come from, and how did that feel when you, I guess, accomplished that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, especially running for office, running against people who are much more accomplished as far as education goes or holding office previously and things like that, when you haven't done that previously, you're very marginalized. And because I was such an underdog, anything I had accomplished was that, I mean, the only thing that I was written as was a cook at Destination Soups. That's the only thing I'd ever accomplished or had ever done in my life. And I kind of took power of the things I had accomplished in the past and things that I continue to, you know?
Well, and I think that's an interesting point to bring up, because especially in local government, I think the people who run or people who participate in the system fully really have an opportunity to give a voice for those people who maybe aren't. I mean, there's a million colleges and universities up here, and I think often the Northeast sort of gets into this bubble of, well, we're sort of the intellectuals and things like that. Yeah. And I think it's great for someone like yourself to really take a stand in local government and say, well, yeah, you have that, but our opinions as just the general population of people really matter as well.
Yeah.
Is that something that you, when you first started running, is that something that maybe you realized quickly that maybe your base really reacted to or something like that?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Because I felt that there was nobody represented me, especially which is fine. They do represent people, but it certainly is a club. Everybody knows everybody. They hang out together, and it feels like this a bubble you cannot penetrate. And I think that's why a lot of people don't run or try to, because it does. It feels like this kind of club, and you don't belong. But with civics, you know, you want to be represented by somebody who understands you and who is like you.
Yeah, and once again, I think, can't emphasize enough, I think it's really important to have people like yourself who are bringing that unique voice to things like the Women's March, which we brought up earlier. So do you guys maybe want to share? I wasn't there on it, Saturday, right, was when it took place? Mm-hmm. So I wasn't there on Saturday, so can you guys maybe give me and the listeners a bit of an inside look as to what went on Saturday, the reaction, things like that?
Sure. Well, I can start with kind of the format of it. Mm-hmm. What we had planned was, it was called the Per Sisterhood Forum Luncheon and then a March. Okay. So we had planned a women's only forum where we had speakers and, you know, it touched on a lot of personal topics and things of that nature. So we really wanted it to be women only, so, you know, people could speak without inhibition and let the conversation flow. We had a lot of great guest speakers. We had a woman, Perman Hardy, who we were able to fly down from Alabama, and she was a pivotal part in the Doug Jones Roy Moore race. She lives in rural Alabama and drove hundreds of people to the polls, and she was just an amazing speaker. And so that was that, and then lunch was at 1, where everybody started to come in. Marchers came in, you know, had a little bite to eat, and then we marched to the library, where, you know, we had speakers and kind of a rally after the march, and then met back at BCC afterwards.
Okay. And then, so Mike, what was your experience on the ground, seeing the people who were
there? Sure, sure. So I had actually spoken with Dana Ribeiro, who was kind of the organizer. Would you, how would you describe organizer or co-organizer?
Well, it was Dana, co-organizer, but she definitely took the lead.
Okay.
It was Dana, then Ruth, then myself.
Right. Okay. And I spoke with Dana Thursday because I cover the city council, she had already alerted us that the women's forum was going to be woman only.
Mm-hmm.
And I expressed that I may be one of the people covering it. So what would happen then? And she said, well, you're more than welcome to cover it, the Standard Times, but we are going to stick with women only. And I asked her, I listened and I asked because I was curious. I said, well, to be truth be told, I am very interested in the forum. I knew one of the forum topics was local media bias.
Mm-hmm.
So as a reporter, I was like, I would love to know what that's about, whether I'm going there as a reporter or not.
Right.
And Dana then explained to me that one of the reasons why, and I think Beth said this, was they didn't want someone to be intimidated to have a voice.
Right. And there were women there who had run for elections in the past. And are they going to talk about how they feel males, you know, marginalize them while standing right in front of them? Probably not.
And when Dana explained that to me, I actually went to some of my friends, my female friends, and asked them what they thought of that. And some of them disagreed. Some of them said, you know what, I completely understand that. It's a tough thing, but... and I actually asked some reporters here what they thought of it, and they could see both sides of it. And at that point, I just kind of thought of it, okay, some people that I really respect, including Dana, they had what I thought was at least a legitimate reason, a debatable reason perhaps, and I think that's part of the thing was
for sure.
You can have a conversation about it.
Yes,
right.
Absolutely.
And I just kind of left it at that. I went the day of just to double check with Dana and say, is it... you know, still woman only? And she said, yep. And I said, okay, thank you. I'll see you at the march. She said, sounds good. I'll see you at the march. And then we sent one of our female reporters, Linda, to go cover. And I think she took some video and some stuff from it there. And then I met up with the march later. I believe my girlfriend and our dog marched in as well. And it was, the signs were definitely something that stuck out. There was one sign, I think, that took many people were taking pictures of, many people were meeting, and I guess they took this sign in DC last year, and it was a picture, a painting of Donald Trump, and how to describe it, he was grabbing the Statue of Liberty's crotch, I think is the way we described it.
Gotcha.
And many
PC
version.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was an event. I think everyone I spoke to, whether it was John Mitchell, the mayor, the mayor's wife, Beth, Dana, everybody I spoke to was really surprised by the turnout. I remember, I think I wrote this as my lead, Beth's face walking out of the forum. You could see the awe of, and she was really impressed by the numbers, the turnout.
Yeah, I really was. And, you know, you organize it, and of course you hope for the best, and in planning, and then, you know, during the forum, you're so busy with everything, you're not really in that moment because you're trying to make sure everything flows and everything's okay. So when I walked outside and I was hoping, you hope for the best, but you don't know until it happens. And it was amazing. And it wasn't just all the people, it was the energy and the excitement and the empowering feeling. It was great, great experience.
And have you ever felt that energy before in the city of New Bedford around, like, any issue, let alone the issue of women's rights, the current state of how women are treated in America, those types of things?
I personally have not. That was the biggest moment for me.
Yeah, and would you say that you have any, could you share with us maybe some of the highlights of the day? Like, do you have any moments that stand out in particular?
Definitely Perman Hardy. That was an amazing moment. Hearing the mayor's wife speak, which we'd asked him to introduce his wife because we always hear him speak, but his wife is this internationally known, renowned oncologist, and we don't hear her, so... That was a really great part for me as well.
Yeah.
What do you think of the reaction to it after? There's been on some criticism regarding the female only forum. What's been your reaction to that?
To that, I understand how it could have been controversial or how somebody would have questions, which I have no problem. Like you said before, let's have a conversation about that and why it was that way and why. You know, that's fine. So the controversy was with WBSM. Taylor, you know, came, showed up to the forum. And the problem with that was he never said, hey, I'm the only one who can come, and I can only be there at this time. I can't cover the march. I can't, you know, be. It's only at this time. Perhaps we could have made, if he were really, because we did invite the media, if he really was in that much of a pinch and was like, I have this half an hour and that's it, perhaps we could have. But the way that he did it was just kind of walking in, going in, knowing, you know, what we had asked and, right. and not really caring about that, kind of made our point for us in some regard, you know? Right. You just show up, and it doesn't matter what we said. You are going to do what you want to do. And there's a Facebook page. It's New Bedford Voice, I believe, and Damon Nermanden runs it. And he wrote a piece about that, actually. It's called Dear Media, No Means No, you know? And it was a great piece because it said, you know, yes, we want to be included, but we'll make a request. We will ask. We won't just show up and tape you and watch, you know, so.
Yeah. I think Mike and I were having this conversation before we started taping. The media needs to have nuance in everything that they do, right? So not directed at anyone in particular, but the notion of ignoring the requests of the people you hope to cover and develop a relationship with to properly tell their story and sort of ignoring them. And not only that, but to sort of double down and then prove their point that maybe, in fact, now there is a bit of intimidation that's coming with it as these right. voices continue to flow in. I think as a member of the media, that's sort of the opposite goal that you'd like to achieve when you're telling stories of people who are making an impact of any sort in the community, right? Whether that be positive, whether that be negative, whether it be neutral, just any member that you'd like to speak with. That's not really how you cultivate relationships.
Right. And I know a lot of people felt that it was kind of like he had planned to do that because mm-hmm. it caused quite a stir and their viewership and listenership would be ones who would be very upset about that, you know, that is their audience. And if he, I mean, the station itself had torn apart women's marches. We know how they feel about the subject, which is fine. You know, everybody has a right to their own opinion about anything. That's fine. That really wasn't the point, but it wasn't there out of like, I really need to know what's going on here. That wasn't the feeling. Because if it were again, if it was, I really need to see what's in this forum and cover it. And this is, he would have spoken when he got there. He didn't come to myself or Dana or Ruth. He knows how to get in touch with myself and Dana, definitely. Or even Ruth is easy enough to find online through social media. So again, the day before, the day of, there was no text, there was no email. There was no even coming in asking for an organizer and saying, hey, this is my situation, can we deal with it? If that had been done, then yes, it would be more of like, okay, you were in a pinch, but you're trying to create this controversial like oppression story where it doesn't exist.
I think something that I took away from the entire day was a chance to kind of look in the mirror as a male reporter and, as I said, asking some of my friends what they thought about it, people who I really respected. And I think it's something where I don't think the media in general does is looks in the mirror, because you look in this newsroom and we have, Beth Perdue is our executive editor. Jen Driscoll is our news editor. Lori, our sports editor, who received a tweet the day of, I believe, the Women's March, saying that how can you be a female sports editor? How can you be a sports editor when you're female? You don't know anything about sports. So it kind of extends that thing. I think newsrooms around the country, we can work on our diversity. We can both, you know, male and female, and then minority hires too. I know the Standard Times it doesn't have enough minorities. I'm not sure we have minority reporter, which is a huge, huge issue in a very diverse city. Mm-hmm. And it's things like the Women's March that kind of brought this to my attention, looking around and thinking, how can we better provide coverage to New Bedford? And diversity is one of that. I'm reminded of the O.J. Simpson documentary by ESPN. And one of the reporters, he was a white male, and he was watching someone testify. And he said, wow, that, you know, that makes sense to me. Oh, it was whether they should allow someone, the jury, to hear testimony after someone used the N-word. The prosecution made the case, or I think it was the prosecution made the case of why it should be admitted. And the white male reporter said, yeah, that I can see that makes sense. And the same, it was an LA Times reporter, the same woman he told this story to, who was a black female reporter, she said, are you kidding me? That doesn't make any sense. No, that can't be allowed. And he said that right there was the moment I knew why diversity was so important in newsrooms, because people experience different things just in the way that Beth has experienced different things than I have just because she's a woman. My black female friend reporters have experienced different things because of who they are. And you don't understand that without discussion and dialogue.
Right. And that rolls back around to what we were talking about before, why I ran, because there was nobody who I felt represented me. So if you're a community and you know, you want people who are reporting or people who are representing you, if they don't look like you, sound like you, talk to you, you stop paying attention so much because that's not how you perceive the world. But then if there is somebody who is representing you or reporting about you who sees the world from your eyes, then you start paying attention more.
Which is kind of the point of democracy. And if people aren't listening to the people that they're supposed to be representing, or the people they're representing, then it doesn't work. And that's kind of exactly why we've come full circle, which is full bubble, one would say. It's perfectly because that's why we wanted to have you on, as someone who, you know, identified a problem and then had the courage and desire to, hey, let me go take on this problem.
And once again, I mean, it can't be stressed enough for anyone who may be considering becoming more outward and sharing their opinions or getting involved in community civics and things like that. It's really important that even if maybe you don't want to run for any office or whatever, you're engaging in these high-level conversations with people that don't look the same as you.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
That don't aren't from the same background.
And
as
when
you.
They say they're experiencing this, you have to
you should listen
because just because you don't experience it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. It does happen in, like, with the Women's March, for example. You have millions around the country of women and even around the world marching and saying, we feel this way, and this is happening, and you still have people saying, no. So, you know, it's important that we listen to the experiences of other people and believe them, or try to put ourselves in their shoes, empathize, and move from there.
Yeah. What advice would you give to somebody who is listening to this and thought about running for public office, but as you thought a year ago, well, I can't do it, or it's not possible? What would you tell them?
I would tell them that if I can, anybody can. I mean, you know, I'm a single mother. You know, I'm working class. But if you have a desire to change something, and it's not easy, you have to have a desire to do it, or you can't. Even if you don't want to run, because it's not for everybody, it's not for the faint of heart, but even just to be involved, find somebody who thinks like you, who you know, believes in the same things you believe in, or find somebody you admire and want to be like and reach out to them, you know, and you'd be surprised at you know, what you get back from them.
Yeah. Well, this is only episode 3, but the bar has been
set.
I guess 2.5, technically. We have that lost episode, but 2.5. But Bethany, thanks you so much for coming in and having a great conversation with us.
Yeah, this is so great. Much. Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, absolutely.
So, Mike, I think that conversation was really important with Bethany, as we sort of covered a lot of topics that are fresh on people's minds and the current landscape of where we are politically, but more as a population as a whole in the country.
I think it's just always key to have a discussion.
Right.
That's how I believe all problems can be solved, is through conversation. And I don't think it happens enough.
And I think we sort of are figuring this out as we go, like we've talked about, but this is kind of what we hoped in our origin discussions about what we wanted to do with the podcast. We really wanted to have these types of topics, these types of people who are thinking at high levels about what they're involved in, and sort of bringing in unique perspectives to an area which I think outwardly for the rest of the country they may see as sort of really pigeonholed into this like academia intellectual type mind state, whereas we have people who are really representing just your everyday working class folks.
Yeah, I think it was my sophomore year history teacher, mm-hmm, who mentioned, you know, 99 99.9% of the world just wants to have a good life.
Yeah.
You know, and we get distracted by the noise sometimes of all the surroundings, where if you kind of block out the noise and focus and have a conversation where you're actually exchanging ideas, not just screaming, which I think is a lot of what Twitter, social media is a lot of times the loudest noises, the people who are screaming the loudest get heard, where it's such a small minority. I remember in Mississippi, a lot of the fans would, you know, just spit venom at me on social media, and I would have to step back and think, hey, this, even if it's 100 people, that's like less than 1% of
the total,
you know, and so I think like sometimes that's, we get distracted sometimes, and it forces us not to have constructive conversations because we don't think people listen, but I think they really do.
Yeah, and that's sort of the it was really refreshing to hear someone who is thinking so clearly and so actively about what she's involved in. So now it would only be logical for us to move into some senseless noise that I can never block out of my mind during this time of year, which is the 60th Annual Grammy Awards.
Love the Grammys.
Do you love the Grammys?
No, I love the Grammys. Every year, one of my best friends, we like set aside everything and we text.
Oh, sure.
We have just a long text conversation, and it's something we look forward to every single year.
Okay. So let's unpack.
Can I tell you?
Go ahead.
Our favorite Grammys moment is. We still like our favorite Grammys
ODB
performance.
I almost said his full name, ODB of the Wu-Tang Clan.
You're going to hate it. I know you're going to be like...
Oh, favorite Grammys performance. Please do not say it's Kendrick Lamar and Imagine Dragons.
Yes!
Are you kidding me?
The best performance. I will get her on the phone right now, and she will speak her mind.
The collaboration one needed.
No, everyone needed it. And another embarrassing moment of my life. I was yelling. I have one. I have an Alexa.
Amazon Alexa.
And I have Amazon Music.
We're not getting the check from Amazon yet, so
no.
Let's not senselessly plug their products.
Shout out to Amazon.
Jeff Bezos, where them lines at?
He didn't pick New Bedford as the headquarters.
Wow,
sadly. It's what it is. Anyways, as we digress, I spent a solid 10 minutes screaming at Alexa to play Imagine Dragons featuring Kendrick Lamar. And I'm like, no! With Kendrick Lamar, Alexa, and of course she's not really. And actually, you know, I think it was the entire time she was just playing. I didn't wait till a Kendrick part. So but it's my friend Alicia and Taylor Swift were the only people who enjoyed that. If you remember that, everyone else was sitting down, and T Swift was totally into
it. And you know, so on the nose that Taylor Swift was the only other person who liked that performance.
Because we were texting about it, being like, is it just us and Taylor that understand
it is
how
just
great
you
this?
And Taylor who enjoyed
I disagree,
that performance.
But
well,
we digress.
Kendrick Lamar, actually a pretty good jumping off point to unpacking
what you were going to say, pretty good rapper. Like, oh,
well,
okay.
Yeah, I mean, Kendrick Lamar, pretty good rapper. Jury's still out on how great the recent album is, but that's neither here nor there, nor is that what this podcast is about. Kendrick Lamar, good jumping off point to sort of unpacking what it is that people find upsetting about the Grammys, generally speaking. I would argue this year people are a little happier about the list that's been released of people who are nominated. But Kendrick Lamar, Imagine Dragons may be your Kendrick Lamar moment at the Grammys, but most of us remember the moment he got snubbed. In January of 2014, so it would have been like the 2013 Grammys, technically. That was the year Good Kid, Mad City came out, if you remember, Kendrick Lamar's first album. Do you know who else came out with a hip-hop album that year, Mike?
I don't even want to say, because you're just going to like throw it in my face.
No. Given that you like Imagine Dragons, you may have very well...
I was going to... Would it... 2013?
It was huge. He was everywhere.
Macklemore.
Yes. If you remember correctly, Macklemore pretty much swept all of the hip-hop categories. There's a pretty big thing. He texted Kendrick Lamar afterwards. Maybe some of the phrasing wasn't best used. I mean, he acknowledged that he used some poor phrasing in the moment. But people often, when they think Grammys, they think about moments like that, where it's artists of color and women who are being snubbed, oftentimes by white males who, at least objectively, did not put out as good of bodies of work or songs or records as those artists. So this year, the list is a little bit different. it seems as if a big talking point is there are certain categories that don't have any white men in them, which is sort of a big thing because it actually sort of seems as if the Grammys is paying attention to what culturally people are listening to rather than paying attention to which Taylor Swift album sold the most that year or what have you. So that's a little bit of unpacking as to what the Grammys are. Now, Mike, Imagine Dragons are nominated
for
a couple of awards.
I don't even own any Imagine Dragons song albums.
You were just moved by that performance?
I don't know. I just liked the performance. I thought it brought a lot of energy. It wasn't necessarily like the music. And mainly because I don't even like that song as much as I loved Kendrick in that performance.
Right.
And I don't think people appreciated Kendrick's energy that he brought to the...
Yeah.
So it's not that I'm an Imagine Dragons fan. Sure. I am a Macklemore fan, I will say that, but yeah. My dog's name is Macklemore.
Macklemore is probably one of the nicer people in rap music. And I mean, that guy truly, it is so rare to see a guy it's probably actually not as rare as I want to think it is, but it seems too on the nose almost that a man who means that well can flub so hard trying to do good.
We all mess up.
Macklemore, come on the podcast if you want. You're always welcome.
Oh, man. Always welcome.
Always welcome, Macklemore. He has great, for anyone who cares to learn a little bit more about Macklemore, he has great interviews on Hot 97, a couple of good ones. They talk about race, his albums, some
we
drug
could
use.
We could have Macklemore
like
on next week if you wanted. Now he's my Boston Terrier. But.
Oh, your dog. I mean, I would love to have your dog in the office every once in a while, Mike. That would be great.
All right.
Bring your dog to work. We should have more of those days.
We're digressing.
Yeah. So, okay, back to Grammys talk. Mike and I thought it would be a good idea to run down sort of our list of not who necessarily who we want to win, though innately I will share who I want to win.
So we're going who we want to win, not necessarily who we think will win, or both.
No. So I think it'll come out who we want to win in these categories. When you do Grammy talks, it's always about... Especially as someone who writes about music, though it is becoming more and more infrequent, it's always important to flex your knowledge of who is going to win. You're always guessing who the Grammy committee is going to elect to win.
Right.
So, like, prior to that, the Grammys we mentioned earlier in 2014, everyone knew Macklemore was going to win. We knew that Kendrick's album, that Good Kid, Mad City album, is probably one of the greatest new generation rap albums of the entire generation. I mean, some would put it at number one, some would say it's his best, and he pretty much has 1A and 1B when it comes to best rap albums of this generation. But we all knew that Macklemore was going to win. So I think the thing that is most interesting is picking who we know will win the Grammys.
Let's do it.
So I think we should probably start at what the Grammys has listed at number one, which is Record of the Year. So, Mike, Record of the Year, we got Redbone by Childish Gambino,
mm-hmm.
Despacito by Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee, and we will omit the feature on that because we are not backing him on this podcast.
It's Justin Bieber, just in case anyone doesn't know.
It's Justin Bieber. You guys know. Story of OJ by Hove, Jay-Z, Humble, Kendrick Lamar, and then 24 Karat Magic by Bruno Mars. Mike, first, who do you think you would like to see win out of this category?
I like to see win.
Do you have a dog in this fight?
Not really. I don't think Bruno Mars will win, and nor do I don't think that song compares to any of the others.
Right.
I really like Redbone, Despacito, Story of OJ, and Humble. I mean, I enjoy all four of those songs really equally. If I had to say, because it's difficult, because Childish Gambino's done. Focusing on acting for a little bit. So, you know,
though he did just sign a big label deal, RCA, I believe.
He did. Well, and then as we talked about, you know, the Career Accomplishment Jay-Z
right.
Award.
Sort of the legacy act.
Yeah. Out of all of them, I like Humble. Mm-hmm. I like Redbone and Despacito. But I kind of like when, you know, the non-radio hits...
Right.
Win, which would be Story of OJ.
Yeah, a great Jay-Z record from that album. Now, Mike, I didn't know you were such a Grammy watcher before this, so now I'm excited. I think you have more expertise than you let on into the committee's mind. Who's going to win this? Who's going to win this Record of the Year?
Kendrick Lamar.
See, I tend to agree with you in a certain sense. I think
if it's going to go to a record that's not Despacito, it's going to go to Humble. But I showed my hand there. I really think Despacito's good. Well, I struggle with this one because Record of the Year does take into account more. I think Despacito wins this.
Despacito set records for being number one for a non-English song in the most in history, I believe. Yeah, so that has a lot of play.
With the committee, it has a big amount of play. And not to mention, this was a big year
Which is why Story of O.J. won't...
I don't think this is the category Story of O.J. wins. I think Jay-Z will take home a Grammy by the end of the night.
You're probably right between Despacito and Humble. Those are the two songs.
I think those are the two. It's actually been... I mean, this is a different, separate talking point, but it's been a big year for Latin music, reggaeton music as a whole. I really wouldn't be surprised if Despacito took this home. If I had to give who I wanted to win, I think that's the best record off the Kendrick album. I think it's far and away. The beat switch is... I mean, that... It's a that's a good that's
has
a good
he won record. Record of the year?
I think I won record of the year. Okay. I could be misstating that, so someone please fact check me and tell me if I'm wrong in the comments. But I want to say that I won record of the year.
Let's move on.
So number two is album of the year. So for album of the year, we've got Childish Gambino again with "Awaken My Love," 444, Jay-Z. We have "Damn" by Kendrick Lamar. Melodrama by Lorde, and then once again 24 Karat Magic by Bruno Mars. Mike, I'm going to be very honest with you. I think that Lorde wins this category. Being equally honest, I still haven't figured out the Lorde thing. I've tried really hard. I can't get into the album.
I have not heard. I think the one single she released I heard, but I haven't. I couldn't comment.
I can't do it. I've tried to listen to it like three or four times. I can't do it. Now, so that's my guess of who's going to win. I think this is the one that Lorde takes home. People really like this album. I'm in the minority of people who say they haven't gotten into it. Generally speaking, it's gotten good praise. Unpopular opinion, I think this is far and away Kendrick Lamar's worst album. What do you have to say to that?
Would that matter?
See, and that's a game I'm sort of that's playing in my head as well. Kendrick seems to have sort of placed himself in that legacy role now, where every time he puts a project out, he might just take home a lot of Grammys.
When you say that, I mean, I think Eminem and Kanye have won almost every time they put on an album. Mm-hmm. They basically take
Eminem,
home hip-hop.
Well, and Eminem, yeah, that's a total nothing.
But that's all I'm saying. I know I don't want to get into your Eminem.
No. I mean, but Eminem at the Grammys is a whole Pandora's box of things.
Right, but all I'm saying is he's won with good albums, he's won bad. So I think Kendrick, and coming from the same Interscope family, so to speak, I don't know if that matters where, this wasn't as good, especially when you've already announced or already established that he's been overlooked in the past. There's always that, makeup call, so to speak.
Well, and To Pimp a Butterfly, which arguably, in my taste, is his best, won a lot of Grammys. But I do think the thing with Kendrick, too, is it's like when you say LeBron had a bad game.
Right.
That game is still better than 99% of the league. So, you know what I mean?
Because I'm going with Kendrick. Why not?
You're going with Kendrick. Okay, so we've got one for Kendrick, one for Lorde. Winner buys lunch.
So I'm going two for
loser
two Kendrick.
Buys lunch.
And now we'll wrap it up with Song of the Year.
Yeah, let's do.
Sorry, I don't want to
Let's
car
do,
here.
Let's do Song of the Year. Why not? Okay, what do you think in this one, Mike? Because I think
this is where Despacito comes in.
This, and you know what? I think I might be walking back my earlier. Comment of Des. I just don't know if the committee gives Despacito more than one win, but I think this is the one. I think this might be the category that I think you're right in that one. I'm not going to change.
Although
my
isn't 444 the one where Jay-Z admits to cheating and apologizes?
But I don't think that.
That
one.
Was big.
It was big. I don't know if that one will. I really don't know. To be honest, too, this could be one that inexplicably Bruno Mars takes home.
That's what I like.
just because. I mean,
that's the name of the song for anyone.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to go with Despacito there, and I think that's the one I'm most certain about is Despacito's song.
I think you're probably right, but just for parody, I'm gonna say that they give this to Bruno. Though I really do think Despacito probably wins. Can we very briefly do some hip hop ones? I said before we
like
started,
a lightning round type of thing.
Yeah, we'll do a lightning round. Just because I kind of wanted. There's some songs that I feel very passionately should win in this.
Okay.
For best rap performance, I would really like to see Migos take this home with Bad and Bougie. I think it'll go to Kendrick because I mean the performance on that was incredible. I find Migos inadvertently interesting. I mean, they are, it's like a 50s doo-wop group embodied in these three dudes from Atlanta. The way it's, the ad lib is almost call and response is, they do it better than anybody else. But I do think it'll go to Humble. I would really like to see it go to Bad and Bougie. Best rap song, and we can, well, let's save best rap song. Best rap album, I think this may be where Jay-Z takes it home. What do you think?
You don't want to know what I think because I can't find the...
Okay, let me read it down for you. So we've got Flower Boy by Tyler, the Creator. Really good record, really well produced. I don't think it'll win. Layla's Wisdom by Rhapsody. Incredible female MC out of Carolina, I believe. Very talented, very good. A little too... I don't think
that
got...
Which one are we on, rap song?
This is a rap album. We're going to finish with rap song because I got the take that everyone knows.
I see it. Okay, I got it right here. I got it right here.
Okay, so Culture, Migos, Damn, Kendrick Lamar again, and then 444, Jay-Z.
Yeah, I think this is... I think it goes between Kendrick and Jay-Z just because of name recognition. It's difficult for someone like Migos to come up and beat both Jay-Z
especially
and Kendrick
album.
Lamar. Yeah, exactly.
And to be clear, I'm not sure that Culture as an entire body of work deserves to beat Kendrick Lamar or Jay-Z. I think an interesting thing in seeing the battle between Kendrick Lamar and Jay-Z is how much they weigh history, right? Jay-Z's been winning some of these awards for years and years now, whereas Kendrick's new but has made himself a staple with the Grammy committee already. I mean, I think To Pimp a Butterfly almost matched Michael Jackson's record for as many Grammys in a night, if not topped it. Once again, if I'm incorrect in that, someone correct me in the comments. Mom, please Google that for me because I know you're still the only one listening. But... Best rap song. Okay, here we go. Best rap song. Run the Jewels is nominated. That would be very cool. We got Humble, Sassy by Rhapsody, Story of OJ by Jay-Z.
Just a little a nugget. For Jay-Z has won one rap album of the year, 1999. So
only one rap only album. One. But I think he's won for different songs.
Oh, sure. But when you look at, you know, the titans of rap, when you have...
A lot of that's Eminem.
But I think Outkast has two. Kanye has a couple.
Outkast won twice for Album of the Year?
Twice Album of the Year.
What? I thought it was just Speakerbox Love Below. Which one? Which other one won? Do you have it up right now?
Yep. They won Stankonia as well.
Stankonia won, as it should have. I did not know that. I'm really glad
to
hear that.
So when you look at those and actually... whether it's Kendrick or Jay-Z, that each of them will be their second rap album of the year.
So yeah, that'll be interesting. But here's my not so hot take: give Cardi B the best rap song Grammy. Give the Grammy to Cardi B. There should be no other opinion on this. Bodak Yellow's the song of the year. Give it to her. I'm honestly a little upset that Bodak Yellow isn't nominated for some of the other non-rap categories. Bodak Yellow, incredible record. It was number one on the charts for a long time. Cardi B is the most enigmatic figure in music right now. Give her the damn Grammy.
Okay, I gotta probably go with. I wouldn't mind if she got the Grammy. I'm gonna go with Humble though.
Okay, I mean that's.
I'm kind of all over the place to be honest.
I wouldn't be surprised if Humble won this. I'm just saying.
I think it's a big night for Jay-Z or Kendrick Lamar and I think
both of them sort of.
But I could see one of them sweeping.
Think so?
I take it back. I could see Kendrick
sweep. Yeah. I couldn't see Jay-Z sweeping, and I think people would be a little upset if Jay-Z swept. Though, worth noting, that album is very good. I think it's good, mainly because I have geriatric tendencies, and I
think it's like you said, it's the LeBron James syndrome where everyone thinks his numbers are down, even if it's 30 points, 8 rebounds, and 7 assists because he was 35, 10, and 9 or something.
Exactly. Well, if Jay-Z and Kendrick are LeBron James, Cardi B is the Joel Embiid of music right now. She's the best out. She should win that record. Mike, I think that's a wrap. I think we've kind of talked ourselves out of all the
music
stuff. The
goal should be to improve every day, and I think we did with this one.
I really liked our conversation we had with Beth in this podcast. So once again, guys, my name is Montana Samuels. This is Mike Bonner. And we hope you'll have us back for episode 3.5.